Hello, everybody. This is Josh Placer from GameWisdom.com. Welcome to another episode of the Perceptive Podcast. For today's cast, this is our second cast for 2016. We got some interesting news to discuss, and our big topic this week is going to be talking about the video game industry becoming more inclusive, both in terms of having more people working in it, as well as reaching out and trying to hit more markets or hit more accessible markets than in the past. I'm sure that's going to be a great topic for later on, but first, let's introduce our guest this week. First, please welcome Game Wisdom site designer, Kenneth Olm.
Hey there.
And returning guest who we have not spoken to, I think, in at least a year or two at this point, please welcome James Ellaby.
Hey. Hello. Hey,
James, it's great to have you back on. When did we last speak? I'm pretty sure it's been like I think it's been 2 years at this point.
I think it's been a little over a year. I definitely wasn't in my new apartment, so yeah.
So, I guess to start catching up then, James, how was New Year's for you? I know it's been pretty, I think, quiet for Ken and I when we spoke last time.
I had a great New Year's. Actually, the girls and the boys kind of separated with some of my friends and kind of went off and did our own things and came back and relaxed. So, yeah, it was a good New Year's for me. Plus, I got a car for Christmas.
Oh, so congrats. I'm happy with it. All right, yeah. So, we'll be talking more about some of the games we've been playing in a few minutes. For you, Ken, anything interesting going on your end?
No. I start a new job on Monday for friend development, but I think probably the most exciting thing is all the VR news that has come out. CES is the big ticket. I've been following that like crazy. There's so many interesting potentials for new technology and new uses and things. Like, I really feel like we're living in the future, because as soon as I saw a machine that folded clothing,
what?
I knew that we were getting to the Jetsons level of technology. It's coming.
All right, call me when we get hover vehicles, especially call me when we get like those self-tying, altering size sneakers from Back to the Future, because I could really
that already exists. People have made those things.
That already exists, actually.
So there's a whole group dedicated to making those things. Oh, as long as the Tupper boards too.
Great.
Didn't Nike actually send one to the guy from Back to the Future? Wow.
Yeah, Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, Michael J. Fox. They sent him some.
Yeah, they did, and he tried them on. It was like a little like Vine clip or something.
Great. Can't wait for that to happen.
So if you follow CES or just check it out and look at the highlights, you'll be pretty impressed.
Cool. And I know probably the big news in terms of the game industry and in terms of future technology this week would have to be the announcement of the official retail price for the Oculus Rift. And what was, I think, wasn't it like $699?
No. Do you want me to tell you everything?
Yeah, go.
They want to know from the VR front what is going on. So this is what's happening. And so in CES, what happened and why people lost their minds is because the Oculus came out at $599, which to a normal person sounds pretty expensive. And for people that are kind of outside and heard about it, it's kind of expected to be that high. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It makes sense for what it is. Now, the reason why there's so much fervor against it is that the CEO, Palmer Luckey, said that it would be around the ballpark of $350 or the same price as the original DK1 and DK2, mm-hmm. right? So it to be almost double like made a lot of people hesitant and fearful and angry. One, they were under the pretense, or at least to them, or they were under the notion that would be far cheaper, maybe $400. Or maybe even $499, mm-hmm. but they went a step above $599, which caused a lot of outrage. Another thing too is people keep saying that they are going to lower the adoption rate of these devices because they're too expensive. A normal person can't get this, right? If a system is about that price or less than that, why would they spend so much money on a display, mm-hmm. right? And they fear that they're screwing the developers over who's spending all these years developing for the Oculus just to find out that the adoption rate for VR, at least these headsets, are going to be much lower than expected, mm-hmm. because of the price point. And there's a lot to say about that too. In fact, we could talk about the Oculus. We can talk about the Vive, the pre-Vive, the second version of the Vive, and we can also even talk about Morpheus if you want. I have information on all that jazz. But I don't know. Do you really want me to go on my little rampage about it, or?
We could talk a little bit about it. I know the last time we talked about like, the Rift and VR, didn't we hit like 2 hours of podcasting that time?
Well, how about this? I'll say my piece on Oculus, okay? Mm-hmm. And then we'll talk about the other alternatives.
All right.
Okay. So just so you guys know, I've been doing development for Oculus, especially for the DK2, for a couple years to a month now. And I would say this. For that last argument I just said about hurting the developers, honestly, I think that any sort of early technology is going to have a higher price point. And I think anyone that went into development solely for virtual reality, a unproven technology, at least into the consumer mass market, is foolish. Mm-hmm. It is foolish to throw all your eggs in one basket. Like, most development companies are doing it on the side. So I don't think it's going to bankrupt any companies. It might hurt some startups. But as just like consoles, like look at the PS3, right? Mm-hmm. That came out at a very high price, and there was a lot of outrage too. But eventually, the technology became cheaper to produce. And same thing goes with the Oculus. They are selling at cost. It's exactly how much it costs to create it. Even without the extra controller and the software, mm-hmm. it would still cost that much money because those are custom screens, okay? And think about this. It is a 4K screen that has to run at 90 frames per second, right? With low persistence, with gyroscopic motions, with a tracking system attached to it, there's just a lot of time and money invested into making this product the best it can be. You don't want a shoddy product coming out, mm-hmm. right? You want to cheap out on this. It's not their goal. Oculus's goal from the get-go was to make the best consumer device that they could. And people like had a knee-jerk reaction similar to when Facebook bought them out. Mm-hmm. But Facebook just allowed them to do more research and get more talent. They got $4 billion to create an amazing device. And from what everyone's been saying, this display is fantastic. And a lot of those issues you have with the DK1 and DK2 is pretty much gone. And the parts that go into this thing is great. They thought about it's not just the technology in terms of the screen, but in terms of the comfort, its usability, its extensibility, meaning how far it can go in the future, has all been thought of by the best that we got. Mm-hmm. So again, I think that everyone's just having a knee-jerk reaction, and calling VR dead is very silly. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard that. VR is dead. Sure. Like when Sony released the PS3 for $699, they were like, Sony's dead. Sony's not dead. Sony's not going to die. All right? Mm-hmm. However, maybe your hype died down a little bit, but that wasn't their purpose. Mm. And the more they go into it, a lot of people are also arguing that, well, we'll just go to the Vive. But you think the Vive is going to be cheaper? You're kidding yourself. That's even more stuff that they attach to it, a lot of technology that they're going to add to it. And the Morpheus is rumored to be $800, which is still really crazy. Mm-hmm. So, but you could also think about it like this. This is a high-end display. If you go for a 4K monitor now, it's also around $600. The X34 Predator, my monitor that I want to get, is a wide curve monitor at 144 refresh, right? Mm-hmm. And it has G-Sync technology inside of it, and that's $1,300 for that monitor alone, okay? Mm-hmm. And again, this is a 4K screen custom built for VR. Of course, it's going to have just as much demands and just as much cost attached to it. So I think of it more as that. So I was never perturbed by the price. Mm-hmm. So that's it. And again, I'm not going to overreact, right? Like all these people. In fact, a lot of people that overreacted initially with the Oculus buyout regretted it later. Mm-hmm. And people that, when people actually receive their CV1s and the people that had the knee-jerk reaction, they're going to regret it. Mm. Because This isn't just like a toy that we're investing in. This is like the future. Like, it is a completely different experience that we're going to have, because it is like it's like discovering like light speed travel. That's how much of a difference between the DK1 is and the CV1. It is huge, right? It's like spinning hard drivers and SSD drive. You don't go back. So this is going to be amazing, and I am extremely excited about it.
Okay. Now, I guess another thing to keep in mind is that, again, the Rift is the really like the first generation of what VR is going to be. So obviously, it is going to be higher priced because this is the first one. There are no other VR systems being developed, or I'm sorry, no other VR systems out already to really price it around. So for people who are, you know, a little sticker shocked by that price, you know, in a few years from now, when there's several different versions of the Rift, and of course, as you just mentioned, Ken, other VR systems out to essentially create that market, the price should come down over time. We're just in that same state that what happened with VR back in the 90s when it was so new, and I don't even remember like what was like the price on some like the basic VR systems when it was like the quote unquote peak of it in like the mid 90s.
Well, you know what? You know why the VR, why the virtual reality, Virtual Boy failed so hard too? Mm-hmm. They cheaped out on the screen. They could have done color, but they cheaped out for this like red LCD thing. Or not, the, whatever, but I don't know the technology, but the red line thing.
Which caused eye problems, and I only could play for like 5 minutes, and I could sort of feel that migraine, you know, in the top of my head.
Oculus pulled no punches. Mm-hmm. They put the best of the best they got, and they gave it a reasonable price. I expected it to be higher. So, like, that's completely fine with me. So if you were expecting a VR device to be $200, you're kidding yourself for something that's supposed to be high quality. Yeah. Again, why do you, like, they have the money, they have the time. Why put out a shoddy product?
Yep. They're going with their best foot forward because, again, they know that for VR to survive, they need to do that. If they release something half-assed that barely worked, it's basically going to kill VR just like, almost like it did in the 90s.
Right, and they're not going for pure profit. They are making the impact, the first steps, right? Think of all those like consoles and computers and all those first prototypes that died to create a whole industry. And I don't think Oculus is going to die because Facebook's backing them, but like they are the first brave like souls to release this commercially.
Yep.
And I was going to say the Vive is still really great. The tracking is fantastic, and they actually create a smaller. They changed the design for the Vive, which is Steam and HTC's version of a virtual reality headset. That's getting a lot of. It's actually got tech of the convention for CES. Actually, they actually added a augmented reality camera in front. But you know what really annoyed me is I was watching a YouTuber and they're like, "Man, they said that Valve's Vive is going to have something groundbreaking, and they put a camera in front. Who cares?" I'm like, that camera has so much potential. It's combining virtual reality and augmented reality. One, it's a pass-through camera, so you don't run into things. Two, you can actually do like real-time hardware-rendered amazing graphics like in front of you. Like it's not tethered by a mobile device like the HoloLens. It is you can put on like some really heavy amazing things with that tech. So what they did was they actually leapfrogged over Oculus by adding that camera. So like that guy is short-sighted. He's all like, "Man, I don't care." I'm like, "Listen, if you care about VR, you should understand about AR too, because that's just as big as VR is. Because AR is way more towards the consumer market. VR is more towards enthusiasts, and it'll be niche for sure. But again, the best way to spread VR or the gospel of VR is to try it. And that's why things like Google Cardboard exist. That's why things like Gear VR exists, right? It's cheaper alternative to show the potential of VR. And also that mobile VR is more than just games. Mobile VR is usually for experiencing media in new ways. For example, 360 pictures and movies, etc.
And when I spoke with a developer earlier this year, who I cannot remember his name, he was another big proponent all behind VR. He was talking about how specifically what's going to be so exciting about VR is not what it's going to do in the video game space, but what's going to do for everyone, you know, augmented reality, basically enhancing a lot of other technologies and industries using VR.
Right. It has a very large effect. It's going to create a shockwave through a lot of entertainment and serious industries, like the way that we interact with things. So it is much bigger than what these internet commenters are saying, right? It's just so wild to have such a knee-jerk reaction like this. It's like, because to me, it's not, Facebook deserves a much bigger reaction than a price increase, right? Mm-hmm. Like, even you can see, like, this is definitely a knee-jerk reaction, mm-hmm. right? It seems like the rage seems unwarranted, I think. I mean, there's some of it, but I wouldn't say it to the point where you would boycott a company, you know? Yeah.
And
he actually held a PR conference a Reddit AMA, Palmer Luckey, and just pretty much said that he's the one that misspoke, and that was it's mostly his fault.
Yeah.
But when you're that excited about VR and your lawyers are telling you to shut up about it, things will slip out, right? He's young too, so like I'm fine with that. I wanted that information.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
All right. Now, I actually have some interesting technology news I want to talk with the two of you about. This is another interesting that happened over last week, and it's concerning game piracy. Have you guys heard of this little thing before?
What?
About, apparently, a major pirate group gave up on attempting to crack the game Mad Max. Oh, I'm sorry, crack Just Cause 3. And they're talking about how there's finally anti-piracy DRM that they can't crack. And it's not so much causing shockwaves, but it's presenting some interesting discussions about the future of game piracy. So from what we've heard so far is that both Mad Max and Just Cause 3 by, oh my god, I can't believe I forget, oh, I'm sorry, Avalanche Studios, both use a DRM called, I'm just gotta get the exact name, where is it, Denuvo Anti-Tamper. It was also in FIFA 2016. And apparently, it's causing them a lot of trouble to the point that this major group, I think it's called 3DM, which is supposedly, I think, a major Chinese hacker or major Chinese piracy site, they're just not able to crack it. And they've, according to a quote they released, they said that there will be no free games to play in the world. There's some hyperbole there, but what's interesting is that this is the first time that we've seen a DRM service or a DRM system that is causing pirates legitimate trouble. And I actually played Mad Max. I didn't know it had that DRM in, and I didn't notice any issues with it. Supposedly, from what I read from some of my more technically inclined friends, they say that it has more effect on the CPU side of things, and it's causing more challenges when it comes to piracy. So, a few years ago, I actually wrote a piece on the site saying, you know, why game piracy will never die, that kind of thing. And it sounds like things may be starting to go the other way. So, now, game piracy is a topic that it's definitely way too big to talk about tonight. If we put that in along with our talk about the video game industry becoming more inclusive, we'll be here till like 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. But to get just a brief talk about it, for both of you, what do you think about the video game piracy scene? Because I hear different things from different consumers, different levels of people who are, I guess, who have knowledge about how game development works. And since we haven't heard from James in a while, we'll start with you.
Well, first of all, I'd have to say that when it comes to something like video game piracy, it's like the sword versus armor. Somebody creates a sword, somebody creates armor to beat that sword. Mm-hmm. Somebody creates a sword to beat that armor. Mm-hmm. Then somebody creates armor to beat the sword.
Yeah.
So the technology that you're talking about right now, it's going to be the top of the line. Wow, hackers are having trouble with it. They can't break it. Somebody's going to come along and crack it, and it's going to start the piracy thing over again, which is going to increase, obviously, more security.
Yep.
You know, I honestly look at it as a never-ending war. Where you have sheep, you're going to have wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember you were saying something about that a Chinese company tried to hack it, and they said they couldn't, right? Mm-hmm. Now, was this Chinese company a black hat or white hat?
That they are not reporting on the sites that I've been reading. So I'm not 100% sure.
Well, here's a question. On the sites that you were reading, were they did they name themselves, or did somebody else name them?
According to both sites, it's a see, a member of the high-profile 3DM group of software pirates. That's the only thing that they're actually releasing in the press releases. Yeah, so...
Well, I mean, even still, like I said, whether or not they were black or white hackers, or black, white or black hack, white or black hat hackers, again, I still stand by what I said. I think it's always going to be... That's a never-ending battle. Mm-hmm. It's something you're always going to have to deal with, is hackers beating new programs to shut them down, new firewalls coming up to try to stop them. I don't see, is it the end of free gaming? No.
No, of course not.
Somebody's always going to try to find a way to get a game for free.
Yeah. Okay. And Ken, your thoughts?
I would say this. I agree. I think your analogy was pretty good about the sword and shield, because it's never going to stop. They're going to eventually find a way to crack it. However, I'm sure with always on connectivity and all the kind of stuff like that, it makes it much harder, as you have to request things from a server to actually I hate that, because that can do some major problems or give major lag to a game. But I think that because of the authentication process and a mix of these different techniques are going to make things slower for the pirates, for sure. So I think maybe the hyperbole should be more like, there'll be never be free games for a while.
Yeah. And
what was the group called again?
Oh, let me pull it back up. It is 3DM. Yep. And both of you, I think, make really good points. And I think the big key thing about video game DRM and anti-piracy measures, at least from what I've spoken with other developers and read pieces about, is that the point of these DRM services isn't to prevent piracy. As both James and Ken were saying, there's very unlikely going to be the quote-unquote ultimate DRM, the one that will never be cracked, will never be pirated at all. The point is to delay it long enough for the game to get the maximum amount of sales. As we've seen with a lot of big releases and what we've heard about in the market, usually most piracy measures are meant to protect a game for at least, I think it's like a month to 2 months after release, ideally for a year. I think that's the point that a lot of major publishers and developers really want, to get 1 year of complete piracy free for their games. Because at least the first 2 to 6 months is a major time. That's when the game is going to be at its highest. It's going to be at the most high point in terms of market visibility. This is where gamers are expected to pay full price. You're not going to find a AAA game on deep discount 2-3 months after release. If you want to play that game, you're going to spend what they want, the $50, $60 for it. So if they can keep someone from pirating the game for that window, it will ultimately help them out more. Once you get like 2 years, 3 years down the line where your game's down to like $10, $15, you're not so much worried about game piracy at that point. A friend of mine that was reading on one of my forums, he was saying that probably the best solution would be to have DRM and then say, basically have like a contract saying that after 1 year, all DRM for a game would be removed. And I think that's something that I would really agree to. Again, because the first 6 months of the year is such an important point for the video game in question. Now, what's interesting is that we have seen cases where games that have not had any piracy measures still do really well. The big poster child for this would be The Witcher 3, which CD Projekt released without any DRM, and the game has done amazing for them. But it's definitely a very interesting discussion. The AAA market, though, is a lot different. There are people who, as we've seen multiple times, hate major developers. I mean, we, of course, passively-aggressively mock EA every chance we get. But there are people out there who, they will steal from EA on, their own sense of morality. Like, how dare EA try to charge money for this? I'm just going to pirate their game. They don't care about the price, they just want to stick it to the developer. And for those high-profile targets, it's important to have these measures in place. I know very recently over the Christmas break, Steam got, I think they had a DDoS attack by some group.
It wasn't a DDoS attack.
Oh, what was it?
There was a claim that there was going to be DDoS, but what happened with Steam was an issue with caching.
Okay.
So it was whoever company was in charge of that kind of information. The system that got reset and it just screwed up everything. And I guess it was the method because they remember the big way to get cards this year was to do the queue. Mm-hmm. And that was probably part of the issue.
Mm, yeah.
So, but it wasn't a hack attack. It was pretty much just issues with software.
Okay. The other example I was just thinking about was Sony. I know Sony has been hacked several times over the last few years. I know there was a very big PSN breach. Was that in 2014 or 2015? Do you remember, Ken?
It happened twice, didn't it?
Yeah,
that happened twice.
Yeah. So when we talk about companies who are trying to protect their stuff, there's a big difference when we're talking either indie developers or those that are very popular in the eyes of consumers versus, you know, the AAA, the faceless, nameless corporations, those types of things. When there is no personality, no face to that, when they're not that transparent. I guess another great example of that would be all the developers we've spoken to over the last few years. Being able to talk to these indie developers has been great, and you're far less likely to, you know, attack someone or try hack it if, you know, they're this friendly face, you know them, they make constant posts. But when you're talking about developers who do things either not so nice or who've had major flameouts, such as Phil Fish and other developers like that, when you become a target like that, there are people who are going to attack you.
Definitely. And I would say no matter what, there's always going to be a group that hates you or despises you. And they're just giving validity for whatever reason they can get to pirate you. So you can't make everyone happy.
Exactly.
And I would also say with CD Projekt Red that they had a really faithful fan base. That really helped. And they did release it on Steam, which is already DRM. So, you know what I mean? That was...
Yeah.
That also really helped with the piracy issue.
Mm-hmm. Now, the one benefit that some people are talking about with this new DRM service, the Denuvo, is that if it does become popular enough, it could convince more AAA publishers to port more games to the PC. I know there's always been that stigma for the longest time that many console developers avoid the PC because they fear game piracy. I think, wasn't like Square Enix a good example of that?
Yes, and Ubisoft also does double DRM, yeah. God dang it. It was horrible. I was trying to play Tropico 5, and I had to go through Steam DRM, then the Ubisoft, whatever it's called, Uplay. And then from Uplay, there's another one for Tropico by itself. Mm-hmm. That's three DRMs in one game. I didn't even remember it was three. It's three, not just two. It's three of them. Mm-hmm. Tropico itself had one. It was awful.
Yeah. So if they do find a DRM that is friendly to the consumer and does, again, protect the game for that window of profitability, we could see more games coming over, which is good. But I think, again, to take things back full circle, I agree with both of you that in terms of the quote-unquote perfect DRM, I just don't see it. I mean, who knows how long it's going to take, but I'm sure in the next year we'll probably hear some major news piece saying, Denuvo has been cracked. Pirate groups have finally done it. That kind of thing.
Oh, no, that's already happened, actually. Well, I'm reading a forum that said they actually, it was like 15 days later, they actually did crack it. But that was on Reddit, so I'm not too sure how.
Mm-hmm. Reddit is pretty bad. I would believe it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm sure we'll be seeing some major news piece on Gama Sutra or any of the other major sites within the year saying, you know, it's been cracked and stuff like that. And who knows, maybe the piece that you just read, James, maybe that's the prelude to that.
Yeah, Denuvo DRM finally cracked by 3DM. Mm. After 15 days of work, the 64-bit version of Denuvo has been cracked.
Mm-hmm.
The hints at FIFA 15 and Lord of the Fallen being ready for release in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Or this might be it. Yeah. Hmm.
Yep. So it's again, I think your analogy is pretty apt, James, regarding the sword and the shield. It's always a technology arms race between the pirates and the developers. I mean, again, I get to date myself. I remember the early days of Securom. Oh, what was the name of that very evil one that I think supposedly
Punkbuster?
That one, but there's a second, there's a third one besides. Oh, I can't remember, but there was one that was really bad.
What game?
Oh, man, it's not coming to me. This was like early thousands.
Early 2000s?
There's one, Star Force. There we go. Star Force was, of course, one of like the most hated DRM systems from the early thousands. And I think there was rumors that it would destroy hard drives. No one wanted on their systems. Once it gets on, it's almost impossible to remove without, you know, going in and finding all kinds of stuff. Made people like equate it to being like its own virus, essentially.
Yeah, there was people that made it a virus program, right?
Yep. So, and that has always been one of the major ways to rationalize game piracy. You're quote unquote fighting back against these systems. And I think, as both of you said, there's always going to be people who are going to pirate these games. I have my go-to example of someone who I used to know who basically pirated everything and anything he would get his hands on, no matter what the price of the game, no matter what the game was, essentially. If it was available to pirate, he was going to pirate it.
Yeah, I have a friend that does exactly that. It's like, I just pirated this movie because I can. I'm like, why? It's like, I don't know, because I want to? I'm like, okay.
Yep.
I guess. Freaking jerk. Mm-hmm. People work on that thing.
Yeah. And I think it's always interesting to have these discussions, again, with the video game industry, because there's various levels of understanding the market. Now, talking to you guys, and of course myself, we're pretty knowledgeable about the act of making video games and what goes into them, but the general consumer probably doesn't. And of course, if I ask one of my many developer contacts, I'm sure they're going to have some nasty things to say about game piracy.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, but then again, there's a lot of misinformed people too. Like, remember when we were at that meeting, right, for IGDA, and we had that student that told us that, yeah, I want people to pirate my game. I'm like, why would you, what? Like, you spent all these years working on your game, sacrificing all that time and money just for someone to pirate your game? Let me do you a solid. Just throw $100,000 into the trash. And that'll be the equivalent of what you just did.
Could this guy explain himself as to why he wanted people to pirate it?
Goodwill.
Yeah, and like he was more interested in people experiencing his game and making money on it. I think that was what he said.
Well, then give it away for free.
Free. Like, then never charge for it, right.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like he was saying that for the shock value.
Me too. I was thinking like that too. He's like trying to be edgy. He's like, you know what? I hate the New Deal. That was the worst idea since the Holocaust. I'm like, all right, shut up. You shut your mouth.
Yeah, and I don't want to spend too much longer because, again, this is a topic which we could probably dedicate, and we should dedicate a full cast to, just talking about game piracy. It'll be great, I think, if we get a few of our developer contacts on, Ken. That way we can have discussions both as consumers and the guys who make the video games. Maybe I'll look into that and see if we can set something up. Let's see. To wrap, I guess, this part up then, I don't really have any more final thoughts. Do you guys have any, I guess, final thoughts just talking about game piracy before we move on?
I believe that what Gabe Newell said about a service problem is a big part of it. And I think that these people that just pirate it, I feel like there's a lot of piracy when you're younger, when you don't have any sort of income. But when you get older, I feel that you understand the value of money a little bit more, and you realize that there's people behind the software and the games that they create, so you're more inclined to. So when you choose to pirate something straight out as an adult, like above like 26, for example, like my friend, you're just being a dick. He's got plenty of money to spend on it. I know he spends money like frivolously on other stuff, but people that spend hours and hours and trying to make a career out of entertainment, just perhaps all over them.
Yeah.
Just because he can. I know. Dick.
Yeah. And James?
I bet he'd be the kind of person that would take a candy from a baby. Sorry, go ahead.
All right, and James?
I think it's funny that Ken actually just said that because being someone, I've actually performed I guess I have before. I've performed hard hacks and soft downloaded software hacks for the PSP like 1000, like the original PSP unit, and I did that back like straight out of high school when I was younger. And it was more on the factor of the only reason we did it. Well, two reasons. One, to see if we could. But the main reason was that Capcom wasn't releasing a certain Monster Hunter game to the West, and it was the only way we could even get the game. But now, even being older and knowing a lot more about gaming development myself, even dabbling in the beginning parts of it, it has grown on me the importance of preventing hackers and really helping the game industry, you know, especially watching the indie movie, seeing the guy that created Super Meat Boy,
Edward McMullen,
yeah, Edward McMullen. Like watching a guy like that, it really it destroys. I mean, well, for anybody with a soul, it destroys any notion of really wanting to ever do anything close to hacking anymore. Yeah.
And again, I mean, this is a fascinating topic. I would love to talk more about it tonight, but it's one of those topics that we can't dedicate just half a cast to. We really need to get, I think, a full group together for it. I think that would be an amazing cast. But yeah, definitely look for those of you listening. Definitely look forward to that, hopefully, in the near future. I think I'll start doing some research on guests after this one. But let's move on. We had a tangent, but again, it was a very informative tangent. In terms of games we've played, to I guess move to the next section, I really don't have anything new right now. I'm still going through my backlog. I'm counting the seconds until Darkest Dungeon and XCOM 2 are released, and then that will basically take over, I think, February to probably sometime in June for me. I guess for you guys, do you have any interesting games you've been playing lately? And we'll start with Ken this time.
Let's see. Well, Fallout. I'm still playing Fallout. I made a mod for it, so I spent a good amount of time just testing it. So I played Fallout, and I guess I would try the Resident Evil Biohazard 2 adventure game thing. Not adventure game, but like survival game. I guess it was called, what's the one that came up with the 3DS?
Oof, man. I'm not sure.
Come on now, Mr. Game Journalist.
Too many Resident Evil games. Let's see. Resident Evil 3DS. I know they made a few of them.
Revelations. I remember now. Yeah. It's called Revelations. Of course, it's a corny name like that. Yeah, Revelations. I played the second one, and I was actually doing it to test the Steam Link, because I got the Steam Link, which is pretty cool. But the thing is that if you have a Steam Link and you have a noisy 2.4 gigahertz frequency, like bandwidth, like you're in an apartment with a lot of other people's routers, there's going to be a lot of interference with the Steam Link. So I would suggest getting a long Ethernet cord to make it work and flow. Because I was actually playing Witcher on my HDTV, and I was like, this is awesome. But at the same time, I wish I could just do wireless.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty much. And then also, I tried that game out. I actually quit within the first 10 minutes because it was just bored me to tears. it was just so corny at the beginning of it. And then there's a game called Republic with a Q. My friend just got me and I want to play. And I just bought Project Cars, the racing game, because Assetto Corsa, the other driving game, kind of turned me off because their VR support was really poor. And I heard Project Cars developer is like actually really into it, and have a lot more friendly menus and stuff. So I'm excited to try Project Cars out. I just spent the day downloading it. So that's pretty much it for me.
Did you ever finish Life is Strange? I heard that was.
Of course I did. Yeah. My favorite adventure games.
Really? I should get back to playing that at some point. I bought episode 1 and only played for like 10-20 minutes and that was it.
I love the game, but I don't like the fan base. It annoys me. It's like, also it's all about like shipping characters together and it was just irritating. Because the one of the characters that I love, they hate the most because he's a normal dude. And they think that like him trying to flirt with a girl is like creepy and stalkerish, but he's just trying to. I know plenty of people that have the same kind of approach. But anyways, the point is, that's like a small gripe within the game. But the point is, overall, I thought it was probably one of the best adventure games. And I think even though it has kind of a people are soured on the ending, I'm not saying what happens. I thought it was very well written. Actually, it was no Mass Effect ending. That's poor writing. This one fit very well with the themes, and it was foreshadowed far away. And just because people could predict it doesn't mean it was a bad ending. So I really liked Life is Strange. I thought that was a good adventure game series. I heard Tales of Borderlands really good too.
Yeah, so there's a too.
There's a lot of good adventure games out there to give a shot. I'm just glad the genre is back.
And I know Telltale now, so they're actually going to make a Batman adventure game.
Yes, I want that. I want it. I played Wolf Among Us, that noir Wolf Among Us series. I loved it. One of our favorite adventure games is Wolf Among Us.
Oh, yeah, I like that, too. I still haven't played Tales from the Borderlands, so I need to fix that at some point.
I heard it was good.
I have played that. I played the first episode before all the other ones ever came out, and I loved it. Just never got a chance to buy the other ones when they came out.
Well, there's the season pass now. It was on sale during the Steam ones.
Well, I'm sure there'll be another Steam sale in a few months, of course.
Of course there will be. Why wouldn't there be? Yeah. Of course.
All right. So for you, James, have you been playing any interesting games on your end?
Wow. No, it's funny you say that because I'm probably the exact opposite of Ken. As we are talking, I am playing. My girlfriend just got me Mortal Kombat 9, and I watch a lot of the professional gaming, I guess we call what's called ELO. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watch a lot of professional gaming. I'm watching a bunch of people just doing so I saw it professionally even long before I got a chance to actually play Mortal Kombat. Sorry, not 9. Did I say 9?
Yeah,
10.
I was wondering about that.
Yeah, I'm playing it right now. Yeah, Mortal Kombat 10. And as somebody who's a little bit more, I'd say, a huge player, but light on the development, understanding what development is and how it works and stuff, I'd say I'm probably definitely a baby in that respect. But it's really interesting seeing the engine that was used for Injustice, Gods Among Us, to its like add the graphic hardware of the PS4 and put the engine on it's a beautiful game. Mm-hmm. And I find myself almost distracted because I'm almost looking in the background half the time, seeing all the crap that's going on back there aside of me fighting, and it's really interesting to see that.
Did you get it on the console or the PC?
A console. I don't have a PC yet high enough to really do.
Oh, we'll take care of that.
Ken, that is Ken's mission. So we were beginning to trek on a journey. I talked to Rebecca about it, and she's like, she's down. My lady's down for helping me.
I gave you a price set and two requirements, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. I need to start building a new PC too soon, or at least start upgrading some of my older parts.
Wait, you would want to wait, because in August, the new NVIDIA series, the Pascal series, it's going to be 10 times more powerful than the current cards now. So wait.
Okay.
Don't spend any money on video cards. And then when it does, splurge, because that's like, it's a big leap in technology. Mm-hmm. So I would save up for the video card from here to then.
All right, well, Ken, when that comes out, definitely send me the alert about that.
I'll keep you. You know how I love technology. Oh, yeah. I'll definitely think about it.
Going back to Mortal Kombat 10, it's interesting about your impressions, James, because I think we may have different opinions on that, because I got on the PC, and I remember having just nothing but trouble getting that game to play, because there was such a huge difference between the console and the PC versions.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
it's famous for being
bad. It's all up there with Arkham Knight as like.
I was about to say, Arkham Knight. What a train wreck that game was. I'm still remembering it. You were saying something. I was going to bring it up again because you're talking about like piracy and stuff like that, but like. I feel like the greatest anti-piracy they could have got for that game was all that horrible, unplayable PC version. Because it couldn't get pirated on the PC. What's the point? You're going to play a broken game? All right, whatever.
And I completely forgot an example of like piracy, like the motivation behind it, was SimCity 5 and how the pirates figured out that you could break the always online and the game would still function. That it was just a complete BS by EA and Maxis.
Yeah, it was. And I wouldn't say it's even Maxis, really. Honestly, it's probably... It's EA for sure. Like they hacked into it and found out that they were going to sell like ports and stuff, like C stuff, for like a port would cost like $15 by itself just to build like one building. That's ridiculous. They were planning some big stuff. They're like way stepping over their boundaries, because they knew they had a good fan base. There's time to exploit the hell out of them. I'm like, EA. You deserve this pain.
Yep. And getting back to Mortal Kombat 10, I know that the PC version was not handled by NetherRealm Studios. I think it was handled by...
Oh, really?
Was it High Voltage? Was that the porting company? Do you remember, Ken?
You mean the one that did Iron Galaxy? You mean the one that did Arkham Knight?
Yeah, they did Arkham Knight. I know they did Injustice, too, for the PC, which also had major issues that weren't fixed.
Issues.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting. This is another one of those topics we talked about last week on the cast when I was talking with Tim, which by the time you hear it should be up. I know I'm currently editing it this very night. But we talked about how with... Like, it's such a huge disparity between versions when you have such a horrible PC port, and how it can completely just sully your impressions on a game. And as we said previously in the piracy section, the first, like, 2 to 6 months, or even 2 months to the first year of a game's release, are the most important time for that. If you release a game that's horrible and that doesn't work, it doesn't matter if you fix it within a year, you've already lost your window of opportunity. I know with Arkham Knight, mm-hmm. they took it off of Steam, and then they tried to, you know, resell saying, oh, it's the definitive version of Arkham Knight is out, and people are still having problems with that. Now, with Mortal Kombat 10, I know they have released some major patches for between release and, like, the first 2 or 3 months, but I can't tell you what the current state of the PC version is. But I think... From your impressions, James, and what I've heard from a lot of people, the console has been doing really, really well. I've heard that's probably like the most popular Mortal Kombat game in some time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is sad. it is sad that I'd like to say, I think the understanding part of me says that it is sad. The console gamer in me goes, until I get a PC high enough that can handle all this stuff. I'm kind of, you know, for the console gamers, it's one of those things like, sorry, PC guys, you guys have things like League of Legends. So we're kind of like, you know, it's kind of one of those, I feel like that kind of balances it out. Does it excuse
no,
it?
No,
no,
no, no, it's really business guys holding us all back. But I would say, for you, well, when you get a new PC, you'll send to the PC Master Race and join us.
Oh, the PC Master Race, huh?
The greatest subreddit should join us. Everyone has a picture of their moment of ascension when they get new computer parts. You'll have one, and you'll realize what you've been missing this whole time.
I definitely probably will.
Freedom.
Freedom.
All right.
Yeah. But I've also been looking forward to Plants vs. Zombies, Garden Warfare. If I'd say that is probably the one game I'm looking forward to for.
Yeah, it's surprising how well the first one did. I know a lot of people wrote it off. And I heard, like, Tom Chick from Quarter 3, he raved about. And, like, everyone who I've heard played it just loved it.
Yep. I'd have to say I was... It was one of those. I actually was going through a really interesting phase where I wanted something. I wanted not a first person shooter, but I guess I would say an online multiplayer shooter. And I was Call of Duty'd out. I was just like, I've done this Call of Duty now for years and years. I want something new. And I started looking at things like the cooperative first person shooters, like you just mentioned it in the beginning, where you steal the heist game.
Payday.
Payday. I played that, loved it. I looked at something on the PC and the Xbox 360 that had a game called Arkham Imposters.
The free-to-play.
And heard a lot, watched a lot of reviews on it, and people loved it. And then I found out it wasn't on the PlayStation, and they shut down the PlayStation servers, which made me angry. I rented Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare from Redbox, just kind of one of those, hey, I know what Plants vs. Zombies is. Ha, they're making fun of Modern Warfare. Let me try this. I rented it for a day, and then 2 days, and then 3 days, and then I realized I was wasting my money, and I had to give it back. So I rented it again, and then I was like, I'm paid like 1/4 of what this game is worth already. I'm buying the game. And I hail it as one of the best multiplayer shooters out there. It's so fun. It's so weirdly balanced. Like, you'd expect it to be almost unbalanced, and it's not. And from a guy who's played a lot of first-person shooters, this game is balanced. Yeah.
It's amazing, too. Like, again, like, this completely came out left field for a lot of people. I think I got it from, like, an EA sales. One of those games that's tempting me to install... Oh, I can't...
No. No.
I don't even...
Don't you say
I don't
it.
Even remember the name. My brain has blocked it out.
Starts with an O.
Okay, now it's coming back. But yeah, I dare not now, say it.
Stands for outrageous.
And I believe this also marks our first stab at EA for 2016. So congratulations, gentlemen. We did it.
We did it, Reddit. Good work, everyone.
And for those of you who play our little drinking game about that, you can take a shot now. We've covered it so far.
I'm glad, by the way. I'll do it again. But I would say, why don't we talk about our most anticipated game of 2016? What's everyone's anticipated game?
I think you guys should know, for those of you listening, you should know this by now, but that's going to be a tie between XCOM 2 and Darkest Dungeon.
Yeah. Ooh, Darkest Dungeon, right. Though, XCOM, I loved what XCOM was when it came out, because I think it just helped that they wouldn't make the crappy third-person shooter version of it. It really helped push what I like, why I loved XCOM so much.
Yeah,
because it was just a fresh a breath of fresh air because that genre was like kind of dead at that time, at least to me.
Yeah, and what about you, James? What game are you most looking forward to for 2016?
Well, I already said it. Plants vs. Zombies, but since I talked about that before, I'm gonna have to say, can I fuse? Because they're kind of very similar.
Okay, go ahead.
I shouldn't say that. Yeah, maybe not really similar. Overwatch and Battleborn are the two I'm really looking
for. Okay.
Which one?
Okay. I played the beta for Battleborn, and I've watched so much Overwatch, it makes my head spin.
Battleborn sounds familiar. Is that the Gearbox MOBA?
That's Gearbox.
That's the Gearbox, right?
Gearbox doing a, I guess it's first person cooperative / MOBA. Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, definitely. Yep.
Cooperative / MOBA.
It's pretty much their MOBA. It's
MOBA isn't their main theme though, because it's actually an RPG.
It's Borderlands MOBA. Don't lie to yourself, but the RPG.
Okay, it's Borderlands MOBA. I'll give you that.
That's what it is. I watch lots of videos on it. I know what it is.
So then it's a RPS MOBA then, right? A role-playing shooter MOBA? Because we know Gearbox coined that term with Borderlands.
Well, that's what it is, definitely.
Cool.
I agree.
Yeah.
But I like the... I played the beta. I love the writing. It's Gearbox writing. It's Gearbox characters. There's literally a character named Oscar Mike, which is making fun of every military shooter out there. And he just literally says, like, one of his things is, like, load up, ready, load up, RFO, TFG, military stuff. Like, that's literally what he says while he's on the battlefield shooting people. And it's amazing.
I want that. I want to try that.
And Ken, did you say your most anticipated? I know we talked about this a few podcasts ago. Are you still really looking forward to Overwatch? Or are there any new games you're excited about?
No, it's Overwatch, and it's going to replace all my games.
Cool.
That's it. That's it. I'm ready. I was so addicted during the beta weekend. Came up for the next beta weekend. Please. Please give me a beta weekend key. I want it.
All right. I think with that, let's move on to our big topic, because we've spent the last hour, I guess, going on a nice, I guess, grab bag of interesting topics, especially talking about more like the future of the video game industry between our piracy talks, VR, and just more hints about that. And I think that's a good springboard to talking about our big topic, because it is what many people feel is going to be a major future proponent of the video game industry, and that is becoming more inclusive. As we've all are no doubt aware of, the industry has definitely had some, I guess, quote-unquote, interesting debates about inclusivity and women in the game industry over the last... seems like it's been, like, years, but, of course, the big shitstorm happened. It's only been, like, about a year or so at this point. I think we all know what I'm talking about. I don't really want to mention it, of course. But part of this has been this growing desire for video games to become more inclusive, specifically to get away from what has been almost the go-to demographic, which has been the 18 to 30 straight white male. We've seen a lot of interesting moves on the indie front with presenting interesting characters that stray from that norm. A few minutes ago when I brought up Life is Strange, that's a good example. The protagonist, I think, is a 16-year-old, or is it like a 14 or 15-year-old teenage girl? No, 14, she's high school.
She's 18.
Yeah.
She's in college.
She's not in private school, right?
She's at a private school, right, but it's pretty much a campus. It's pretty much a college. But it's a weird art school with a sports team. I don't know. But yes, that's what it is.
School with a sports
team. The reason I'm saying it's because there's a clique. There's cliques in it, right? And some of them play football. I'm like, I thought this was an art school for like really advanced people. Why is there a football player here? And why do they sound so dumb? Or more like they wanted to do the high school stereotypical clique thing, but like they should have just said it was a prestigious school, not a prestigious art school.
Yeah.
You know?
Sorry, Ken, it's not Drexel, that's why.
They're in engineering school anyways. Mm-hmm.
And speaking about like computers and engineering on that front, there's of course been a huge push to try to get more women interested in both video game industry and of course general computing and engineering fields. Because there's of course been so many disturbing stories and tales of women being uncomfortable, being pushed out, etc., etc. And video game industry is definitely no exception on that front. Now, I think a year or so ago, I think Ken and I, we spoke to someone who plays, like, I think it was Dota 2 competitively, and she talked about some of the horror stories she faced with being a woman trying to play hyper-competitive games. And that also leads into, or feeds into, my mistake, with women trying to work at game studios. There's been a lot of horror stories on that front with women who have just had so much trouble making a name for themselves, and about trying to get video games to be more inclusive. I mean, we talk about games like Life is Strange is a good example, but I remember with the game, I guess no pun intended, but the game Remember Me, that, was that the name of it, Ken? The one that came out?
That's the same studio.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's a good coincidence. Right. But yeah.
I like how I forgot that. Yeah.
But they also had an issue. I think they had pushback from the publisher, I think it was Ubisoft, regarding having a woman as protagonist. They felt it wasn't going to sell.
I thought it was Square Enix.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Square Enix. There's too many publishers that we hate. It's hard to keep track of them all. Or those that have made mistakes.
Or maybe, no. Yeah, I think it's because maybe you thought it was Ubisoft. You know, we should look that up, just so we know.
I think publisher, you may be right, though.
Oh, Remember Me. Because I know it's Square Enix. They work with Square Enix.
Let's see.
Publisher.
Oh, it's Capcom, according to.
Yeah, we were both. That's why there's. That's why there's a battle system. But I know that Life is Strange is Square Enix. But I would say the reason why that game was weak wasn't because it was a battle system that made the game really weak. I like the general style and aesthetic. I think that was great. I think the battle system was just like pushed in there because it had to be action based. As for the female protagonist thing, I feel like that was just like must. I mean. Sure, there was pushback, but I think that's because the game was not very good at the beginning. Yeah. The only good things about it was more the adventure game stuff, like the mind memory stuff, which is why Life is Strange did so well, because the best parts of it was the adventure game elements, right? So they just took the best of what they got and they made Life is Strange. And it just sucks that there was such a fight to get a female protagonist in that game, and the game sucked. I'm like, oh, brutal. Yeah. And they did kind of like Sexify Her Up and a bunch of other stuff like that, and I think some of the strongest female protagonists we have in games are through adventure games, honestly.
I was just going to say probably a great example that would be the Blackwell series. I know both you and I really loved.
I love Blackwell. Anna loves it too, my girlfriend. That is a great series.
Yep, and again, it's a great example of a game that's trying to be more inclusive coming from the indie and smaller tier studios, where we're seeing that flexibility and being able to do things like that, unlike the AAA market, which still seems very much rooted in the straight white male military-esque type games that are being released.
I think we're getting more diverse. Like, if you remember my conversation from the GD conversation a long time ago, I see, especially as a professor, because I teach too, I see a lot of girls come through the pipeline, and there's a lot more girls. Actually, it's weird because there's actually more girls in the gaming programs than ever before, and there's actually more girls in the gaming program than in animation and interactive, the interactive field, which is weird because you'd expect it to be like lower. But I feel like there's a lot of girls that are interested in becoming developers, and I think that after you know, a couple years, we'll see a lot more developers out there. And in fact, you remember how there's always an argument about how women get paid less than men? And then people say there's like a lot of factors, and some of them it's logical and valid. Like somebody did a study saying that they pick, or they mostly pick, or some pick jobs that pay less for that profession per se, like school teachers versus hedge fund managers, you know. So that brings the natural average down. But as I said before, that with more girls coming in, I see that there's definitely going to be a sea change coming pretty soon. And I think that there is those kind of growing pains that you're talking about, right? But I really feel like it's not through the actual companies themselves, but really the fan bases that are creating more of the outrage. I think the companies are more willing to extend out, and they want to diversify their workforce, and they want to give them opportunities. And there's a lot of scholarships and programs that are doing such a thing. And in fact, I think of all the scientific fields that exist, it's way easier to sell games than engineering to girls. Now, that sounds kind of weird to say, but that the reason I'm saying that is because it's more towards entertainment, right?
Yeah.
And I think that that's more allure for people in general.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's one of the main reasons why the video game industry attracts so many people. I mean, this is it's not so much a product-driven business. A lot of people see more as an art form, or see a lot more fulfilling than your, you know, just being a IT manager or doing accounting. I mean, saying you make video games for a living is an amazing thing. And there's a whole big discussion about some of the challenges of viewing video games as strictly a product or as an art form. But again, we'll be here till 5 o'clock in the morning if we start getting on that track.
You're going to be talking about the Michael Bay versus art directors argument. Like, is it about making money or is it about making art? And honestly, I think people are more accepting that games are art. And that, by the way, just to go back to earlier with the thought I was just thinking about, that when we get more girls as managers and stuff too, and developers and getting in higher end positions, I think that we'll start to see more greater acceptance. But I also feel that the indie scene itself is very healthy for women also. And there's a lot more diverse games that are coming out, a lot more artistic games that are coming out. And that whole like 90s, like grunge slash like big testosterone male shooter kind of games are going to start to fade. I mean, they're still going to be there, obviously, right? Just like how there's exploitative films in cinema now, it's not going to overwhelm it. I think there's a lot more. I feel like games have even a lot more diversity than films, just because films has a much, much higher budget usually for their products. And there's a few tentpoles, but now we can have tentpole indie games that have just as much coverage as our AAAs.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, a great example of that would be Undertale, which has just lit, which has been a huge success over the last few months. We spoke about this when I spoke with Tim last week on the cast. We talked about just the amazing support Undertale has received. And as you were just saying, Ken, it's a complete contrast compared to the hyper testosterone, you know, first person shooter driven market that we've seen before. I mean, it's literally a game that asks you not to kill people.
And it's heartbreaking if you do, according to a lot of people.
Yeah. And I do want to ask James about his thoughts on it, but I do want to touch on one point, what you just said, Ken, about how these hypersexualized hypersexualized movies still exist, and the same goes for the video game industry. That's exactly what Ernest Adams and I talked about on a cast in 2014, how these games that are, you know, hyper-sexualized, misogynistic, that are definitely not meant to appeal to women, they are not going to go away. No matter what anyone else says, there will always be a market for those games. It will just be significantly smaller than, you know, a AAA or a major popular game. But the point is, I think the key takeaway from that cast and what I think what we'll talk about tonight is that what we want to see is just moving away from having the same 18 to 30 straight white male being the default template for all video games.
Right, that like the early 2000s balding military, that was partially technology too, right? Making an avatar, and also it's easier to do that than hair. There's a lot of reasons why that same look. But I think you're right. I think the best scenario is just to have it as a smaller margin, less of those games. But I would think it'd be, I think it's, there's people argue that we should eliminate those games entirely. I think that's completely unfair. Like, that's, you, then you're eliminating a whole genre because it offends you.
Yeah.
But as soon as you do that, you break like creative freedom, and that's not fair either.
And I definitely want to bring James into this conversation. So since this, I know we didn't talk about this when you were last here, but when you hear these talks about the video game industry trying to become more inclusive and trying to move away from the default straight white male demographic, what do you think about that from your point of view?
where do I start? It's kind of funny that as you guys have been saying some things, I've been looking some stuff up. One, I think the Daily Dot back in August 25th of 2014 showed that women over 18 make a whopping 36% of the gaming population, which is 1% higher at that time by the adult men, which is 35%. So women are playing games. Women have always been playing games. As far as inclusion goes, it's really interesting when you see, and it's something I think we can't really, it kind of sucks because we're all three of us are dudes, but if I can try my hardest to speak for the women. Women are, I'm not going to say I don't like the games that do this. It's just one of those, I don't think they're as important as everybody thinks. The games that try to focus on having a female character as the main protagonist, as that being the focus of their game. I don't believe women respond to that as well as people think they do. I might be wrong. This is just me talking kind of from the heart. But like, as far as a lot of my gamer friends that I know that are women, like, I'd say all of them either know and love the Legend of Zelda series. They and the main character there, and I'm not talking about, oh, they love Princess Zelda from that series. No, Link is one of their favorite characters. And I'd love to do a study. I doubt there's a poll or study to show how much female gamers enjoy a character like Link, where you could probably go into sexualization and oppression of women, however much you want to add on to the whole Legend of Zelda franchise. It doesn't matter. They love him. They love the character. They love that they can go out and buy a Link doll. They can get the Triforce symbol on their car, on their keychains. He's obviously almost all Nintendo characters are highly marketable, but out of all the characters, Link speaks to females most, I'd probably say, as far as Nintendo gaming goes. As far as other gaming goes, I don't know. Like, my girlfriend, who's never played games before in her... Well, I shouldn't say that. I lie. And that's my... I'm actually perpetuating the stereotype. My girlfriend plays games all the time, actually. She plays the Find the Hidden Object games, and she plays, like, the Detective Tales and stuff like that. She loves those games. Heck, she probably plays them more than I... She probably plays those games about as much as I play console games.
As a quick tangent there, James, does she know about the studio Artifex Mundi by any chance?
Are you talking about my girlfriend? No, she does
They're
not.
They're a company that specializes in hidden object games, and they've really made a niche for themselves by making games appealing to their female audience that way. They do nothing but hidden objects games with, like... I consider it almost like an elevated take on the genre. I mean, I even like playing their games. And again, that may surprise people who know that I play a lot of the hardcore stuff, but I find like to relax to some of their titles as well.
All right, peasant.
And what's it called? What's the studio called again?
Artifex Mundi. I can...
Artifacts Monday. I'll have to check
yeah,
that out.
Let me see if I can get a quick spell. Okay, ArtifexMundi, two words.
Oh, I see it. I see it. Well, yeah, no, I'll definitely have to have her check that out. But, like, as far as, like, I see, now, there are, and if you're talking about it, and we've kind of hit on the female gaming thing. This is the other part I wanted to talk about. And that's all well and good. But I think there's also other demographics that we're kind of missing, too. Not that African Americans have trouble playing video games. They don't. And, you know, but as far as I think there should be a lot more inclusion of African American characters in other types of games other than gun games and sports games.
Yeah.
Did you know that in Remember Me, not only was she female, but she was black too, by the way. So
in what?
Remember Me, the game we just talked about. She was black and they doubled down on her.
Yeah. But like I'm also talking about like giving it's one of those things. If you look at professional fighting tournaments, it's usually made up of Spanish and black are the major races that play fighting games.
For America.
I love little things like inclusions of someone like Echo in like League of Legends, which I think, you know, and I say Echo more than Lucian, because I think Lucian to me is kind of a white guy's fantasy of a cool black guy, but not a realistic one. You know what I mean? I don't know, but that's kind of what I, you know, he's the Blade, cool shades, you know, dreadlock hair, you know. and yet I don't think that's a great identifier for, I'm going to kind of speak my heart here on like young black males getting into gaming. I have young nephews. Who are they going to be able to connect with, or see themselves in video game character wise? You know, it's funny. I think when Barrett, first came out, Barrett from Final Fantasy VII, you know, he was what? The Asian, I guess it's sensei, a Japanese developer's version of a black person.
That actually reminds me. Remember, Ken, we tried playing that, what was that, the co-op third-person shooter from Square Enix that had, like, the most stereotypical African-American character in it?
Oh, God, that game. We tried it. The third-person game.
From Sega.
It's from Sega, right? It was very stereotypical. And he pretty much came out with fried chicken and was like, let's go play some b-ball. And we're like, please.
End this now.
We can't keep playing this. I already feel really racist. Just, here we go. what's it called? We own it.
We do.
It's not forgettable. Wait, God dang it. All right.
Wait, you own it, Ken?
We both own it.
Like a sale.
Oh, my God. It's going down.
Third person second. We didn't know it was going to be like that.
Sure you did.
Yeah. That's what they always say. I was going to say, though, you know what? How about this? What are, to you guys, a positive black character? Like, a black character done well in a game?
Jackie Briggs. Just because I'm playing Mortal Kombat.
Okay. Why? I know what you're talking about.
I want to go, she's... Okay, so you have the black guy soldier trope.
Yeah.
And yet, she kind of is the next generation of that, and I feel like the inclusion of her being female kind of gives her a better view. I don't know. There's just something about Jackie Briggs that, like, and the funny thing is, I can't go to you and go, oh, I've seen tons of young black girls playing Jackie Briggs. But the interesting thing is, I see more adult white guys playing Jackie Briggs. And to me, that screams equality and equal representation, because they don't look at her and go, oh, well, I don't really identify with her, or, you know, and this is also another reason why I like video games so much and the equality of video games. They look at Jackie Briggs and go, well, I can do a 15 hit combo and it does 56% damage. Hell yeah, I'm picking her. And that kind of eliminates race altogether. It's the inclusion of race that eliminates race, if you know what I mean, if that makes any sense.
Makes sense to me.
It's one of those, if blue was missing from the rainbow, you'd notice it. But the very fact that blue is in the rainbow, it stops being that thing that stands out.
What's interesting about Mortal Kombat 10, I know a lot of people also said that they liked the fact that I think one of the male characters, I think, was gay. And they never, like, you know, put like a giant flag saying, oh, this is our token gay character. He was just there, and that was just his personality.
Yes. Yeah. Kung Jun. Yeah, he's gay, and it's alluded to in the storyline. It's not, but it didn't really spark controversy. You didn't see it all over the news or anything, and I like that. I like that, and the fact that I felt like, and I don't feel like it was snuck in there. Well, I mean, look at Gearbox, the sexuality of the Borderlands character too. Axton has been questioned a couple of times.
But there's also a character in the Tales that are that way. I won't say who. I don't want to spoil anything, but there is one that's it's pretty blatant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they kiss and everything.
Oh.
And when we stop thinking about why that's weird or why that's different, is when it starts to become equality and equal representation.
Yeah.
Girls like Link, that's okay. I don't think there's anybody. Not are there girls out there that are probably screaming, "Well, they should make Link a woman or Legend of Zelda."
They did. It's called Linkle.
Oh God!
Did you see it? It's for the Dynasty Warriors version of the game.
Oh yeah,
Linkle.
Okay, yeah. You know.
They're like, we're gonna get a Linkle.
I was actually going to bring that up too. About one of the things that we're seeing, at least from Nintendo, and what people have been saying about Nintendo over the last like year or so, is about having female alternatives for their main characters. Because, again, Nintendo games have never really been about a hard-defined story. For example, with like Super Mario World, a lot of people like the fact that Peach was a playable character in that. I'm sorry, Super Mario 3D World.
Yep.
So that raises an interesting question. For like games like that, where the main character isn't so much a defined character, more like a cipher for the player audience, would it be fine to have, like, male-female model variants in that case?
You know what? I think that's fine, but sometimes it's kind of weird when characters don't interact with you. They do it very neutral, and there's something very special about being a guy and being a girl. Even though people call it sexist, they treat you differently, but I'm just saying, like, not acknowledging your gender at all, that can be seen as sexist too.
Oh, and by the way, I did find the name of the game, Ken. It was Binary Domain. That's the one they were.
What? How generic of a name can you get?
Fuse. What was it? No. Yeah.
Oh, that's the worst. That's the most generic.
I'm looking this up right
now. I should tell my friend about this. Look up Fuse, what happened to that game. That was like, yo, we're going to be like a squad-based Overwatch. JK, we're going to be generic. It's the worst we can go.
Well, wait, is Binary Domain 2 or 1?
1.
Because I just saw Binary Domain 2.
Is this first? We only played the first one.
Oh, you buy.
Oh, apparently they're making another one.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Oh, no. I guess the gameplay was fun, but we didn't get to it. We're too busy being offended.
And
oh, when other people are offended, like, as a black guy, I want to grab this game, show all my black friends, and we would have a good laugh. We would just we would have a whole night of it just laughing at how racist it is.
You know what? We don't really bring this up, and you might. I just wonder, but with your background, is there any? Wait, before we even say what I was going to say, you can cut this out if you want. But before we say anything, just to go back to your original one. By the way, I said cut that out because I just mumbled a bunch of words. So, 3, 2, 1. So, just to quickly go back to what we said previously, I would say my favorite black character in games is actually Lee from Walking Dead. Think he was done very well.
Yeah.
It was more about him being taking on a fatherly role than his like race. It only came out once, and that's because Kenny's slightly racist. That's just how he is. He's from Florida. He says crazy stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. But I think he was my favorite.
Oh, James, if you're looking for another game that has like the trying to have like the stereotypical African American character, there's a game called Marlo Briggs that came out 2 years ago.
Oh yeah. Excellent.
And
of
that
course.
Game also that game hits like almost like every stereotype as well in it too.
You know what? That extra credits video about Call of Juarez.
Yeah, I remember that one.
What is that? That's a great one.
Call of Juarez. That's We should do that. We need to do a let's play where we play racist games.
Yeah, that's dope. You know what, Josh, mm-hmm. With your background, do you think you're fairly represented in games?
I don't really think there are a lot of like Jewish characters. I mean, the only game that is actually coming to my mind is, again, a game from Watch It Eye, the guys who did Blackwell, the Shiva, that had a rabbi as the main character.
Well, how isn't there ones in Grand Theft Auto Vice City? Mm. Oh, I forget this guy's name.
I think there, and you may be right. It's been too long since I played that one, though.
I feel like there's not that much extreme stereotypes there. I mean, the accent comes out here. Like, there's a lot of people that, I mean, randomly Hasidic Jews in games, but there hasn't been really a really Jewish character.
Yeah.
Which is pretty interesting to see, because we see a lot of them in film. Mm-hmm. Tons of them in film. And we see a lot of racist depictions of them, specifically the prequels. Mm-hmm. God dang. You remember that guy, Watto?
Well, but the only thing I'd have to say there, as far as...
You're going to defend the prequels? Go for it.
Like, women... It's a sex. Black people, blacks, or African Americans, it's a race. With Jews, now you're kind of touching the religion barrier. You can't talk about Jew without going into religion barrier. And I think that's an area that games are very, very tough. You know what I mean? Like, I hate to say it, look at the news. You start talking about religion, people start dying. Race, you're going to have a riot, a hanging here and there. Maybe a shooting or two. You know, sex, you're going to have somebody nag or get angry. But when you talk about religion, you know, crap hits the fan. Yeah,
religion is definitely one, like, the... I think I consider, like, one of like, the major, like, taboos for a video game... For the video game industry in general. It's one of the things that we really don't see. I think another good one would be showing violent acts against children. That is definitely, in almost every context, a no-no.
You can mod Skyrim to murder children. Yeah,
but in terms of someone actually making a video game, specifically with being able to injure children or kill children, that's a different story.
Yeah. And there are taboos out there as far as that. To tell you the truth, Final Fantasy is probably one of the few games you're going to see where, like, some of the main themes in there are... I mean, Final Fantasy Tactics is one of my favorite games of all time, if not my favorite game, and it's a hard, like, it's really hard to strip it, to separate it from its poke at Catholicism and early church doctrine.
I feel like a lot of Japanese games do that, though. Grandia 2 is that way too. Who's the nemesis? The church.
Yeah. Yep. A lot of early RPGs were fronts against religion. And coming from Japan, it makes sense culturally. You know, they were kind of a hodgepodge of religion.
And, like, so, we were, and Christians were pretty rigorous in terms of their, what do you call it, missionaries or missions, per se, so.
Yeah, and it is definitely interesting to have these talks these days. Again, and when we talked earlier about some of the more hardcore fans trying to defend these practices, 15, 20 years ago, discussions like this, discussion about having more women in the industry, about showing people of color, even people of different sexualities. I know GLBT issues have also risen, or LGBT, my mistake, for video game characters, and just in greater representations in the media as well.
Mm. Right. I also felt the pushback with super racist people also coming out the woodwork. Mm-hmm. Saying, like, these people are just being nervous. I'm like, all right, racist guy. It's like,
I don't know.
I don't need them. What was I?
Racism to me is almost like an old form of comedy. It's one of those. To me, it's like an old form of comedy that, like, it's like when your grandfather tries to talk about things that were really relevant back in his day, but no one really cares about anymore. You know what I mean? When I first got the 8-track, it was the best. Grandpa. Yeah, we know. Thank you. You know, a good, like, and like, I go online and my online profile name is Ebony King or Ebony Soldier a lot of times. And I've been on League of Legends already and had people rage at me calling me the N-word. And to me, it just makes me laugh. Cause, like, do you seriously think that's offensive anymore? Like, I mean,
it depends on you. It depends if you find it offensive. Like,
well,
to
me. Yeah.
I would say for me, for example, if they were to say it in whatever context with, you know, call me with the C word, like that could probably find that offensive. But there's some offenses I find hilarious, like if they called me Chinaman, that's super offensive and hilarious.
Uh-huh.
But for me, the other word, it all depends on how they're using it and their intention.
Yeah, maybe that is. But, well, to me, their intention is irrelevant because we're playing an online game with avatars and profiles that have nothing to do with my, like, you saw a name and you assume that that's who I am. And I'm this is a virtual world.
I'm saying that that's the first thing that comes to their mind. So they use the N-word for everything. The N-word. I'm like, okay. This is nothing to do with video games. Sorry, I just had a flashback of memory. One day, I was walking out of Chinatown. I know it's a very subjective meeting in Chinatown. Walking out of Chinatown, got some food, and these two white guys, probably like late teens, early 20s, we're really drunk, driving a truck down, and just screamed when I was walking out the gate. They screamed the N-word at me. I'm like, what? Why? What? Why? Why you say what? They were going so slow, I could have like walked up like, why you do this? But I'm like, I don't know if they were drunk or they just think every minority is the N-word, or I don't know. Maybe they wanted to catch me off guard, or maybe they were just that pissed drunk. But like, please. And also yelling that in Philadelphia, they're lucky they were in Chinatown. And the other block, they'd be dead. Sorry, random tangent there. Talk about the N-word.
Well, I mean, so to say, it's funny because I didn't know you were Jewish. And it's kind of interesting
that you are.
What's that?
I outed Josh. He is. But I was I outed him. I'm sorry, Josh. You can cut this out if you want. No one has to know.
I see more people using the word Jew as a slang, as a negative slang word online, probably even more than I see. Probably equally about as much as I see the N-word, which is just out of interest.
Yeah, I mean, that is one of the things that I do find a little bit, kind of does rub me the wrong way, especially when I reel off forms and as you were just saying, James, when like anytime you talk about like money or trying to appeal, I know with Aeneas Sarkeesian, they keep, you know, they throw Jew as, you know, an insult, or they say they call developers Jews when they're trying to, you know, attack DLC or monetization. And yeah. I will say that does kind of annoy me when I see that constantly on a lot of message boards.
I can see that very easily. Like, say, I get called the N-word just out of hate and anger, and to me that's not hatred. Like, that's not racism as far as hatred. That's just you're mad, you're trolling. But when the word Jew is talked about in a negative slang, and the person says it as if there's nothing wrong, like that's just part of their vocabulary, that's true racism in my mind. But we're kind of video games. Go back to video games.
I would still say that's racism still too. Both are racism to a degree, because if you let him get away with that too, like he'll just continue doing it forever. So what you're doing is perpetuating it and allowing it to happen, right? That's what I think that's also. But then again, you don't want to react to someone like that because they'll do exactly what they want. That's why they said it in the first place.
Yeah, they want a reaction out of that.
Right. But the best way to do it, the best thing you can do is report them. And then now League of Legends, by the way, specifically, enough people report them, it actually says that person was banned. I'm like, good. Thanks.
Oh, really? Wow.
If every single person does it or eight people do it, it'll say it. And they will get banned immediately. Yeah. Because people had said there wasn't enough feedback for people reporting. Yeah,
League of Legends is surprisingly a great example of becoming more inclusive on that front. I know that Riot has taken painstakingly amount of work to make their game friendlier and less toxic. I think we spoke about this when we had our guest on about Dota 2, when we also brought in League of Legends with the tribunal system, and how now if you say something offensive or if you start making a toxic atmosphere, people will be able to like monitor you, and if they deem you as, you know, at fault, they can ban you. And Riot has no problems with banning someone who's creating a toxic atmosphere, even if they are like, you know, a pro esports player. Now, one thing that I want to touch on, because I think this is a really good point that we were talking about a few minutes ago, with to present race and people of different ethnicities, different sexualities, making it common and not making, I think, it, what was the expression you used, James, about it when if it's there, you're not noticing it or something about that with the rainbow analogy?
Oh, I just said that, like, if a color is included, mm-hmm. you don't it blends. It, you don't notice it as much. But when a color is missing, that's when you realize it's not there. You look at a rainbow and you don't see blue, you're like, something's wrong with this rainbow.
Yeah, and the point that I was trying to get, one thing that I'm seeing a lot that I'm liking is in some TV shows I've been seeing, a lot of, like, British shows, when they have characters who are either a minority or are LGBT, it's never, like, pointed out, it's like, oh my god, this is, you know, a gay character, or this is our black character, or anything like that. These are just people living in the world. No one points it out. There's never, no one harps on it. It's just considered normal. And I've
just been started watching Luther.
Oh, I like Luther, too. But, like, I was watching the show The Flash that would premiere earlier in 2015. One of the characters is gay on that show. It's never, like, when it points out he has a husband, you know, nothing stops. There's no, you know, like, the record scratch moment. Everyone just goes about their day. Like, that's normal. That's perfectly fine. And I'm just...
Wait. On The Flash?
Yeah, not one of the main characters, though. The police chief.
Oh, yes. Oh, yep. Wow. See, and that's the best part. I didn't even remember which one it was because it was so nonchalant.
And I'm just wondering if we'll hit that point with mainstream video games as well. We brought in Mortal Kombat 10 earlier. I thought that was a good example of being inclusive without it, you know, again, pointing it out, you know, with giant arrows pointing at these characters.
Yeah. True.
Let's see, Caesar. Again, this is one of those topics. I think it's a very fascinating one. We could really spend a few hours on it. But I know we are getting close to where we've gone over the hour and a half mark for this cast. So
okay, let's wrap it up.
Definitely. Yeah, so definitely, just like with our talk about piracy, this is one of those topics that it's not going to be solved or completely discussed in an hour and a half podcast, or even in several ones. I'm sure we can definitely come back and talk about this throughout 2016, either with having James back on or with other guests as well. What do you think, Ken?
I think that we have a bright future for 2016 because of all the amazing tech and all the weird games are going to come out. And for Overwatch to overtake the MOBA scene, it's going to be... I'm excited for this year. I'm excited to be live. Yay.
And for you, James, do you have any final thoughts?
I think 2016 is going to be a very fun year for gaming. And tell you the truth, it's funny, I completely forgot about it, maybe because I put it in the back of my mind, but I think No Man's Sky is also rumored to come out for 2016. Is that true?
I've heard rumors about, but I have no idea. It's one of those games, I think it's been developed for years now.
I think if it comes out 2016, we're going to go from Skyrim into space, and I can't wait for it.
Yeah, according to their little news piece, or when I look it up, the current tentative release date is June of 2016.
If they stick to that and that actually goes through, I want to see what kind of impact that game has on the game industry.
And I guess for me, I think I'm going to echo what you guys are saying, that I think 2016 is definitely going to be a very interesting year. Again, 2015 was definitely marked with a lot of heavy discussions about the game industry becoming more inclusive to not just women, but of people of various ethnicities, genders, etc. And now that we've had those heavy discussions, I'm definitely curious to see what will actually be the fallout from that. Are we going to see more AAA developers try to be more inclusive? Because, again, obviously, the indie market has definitely gotten that covered. I'm still playing Undertale, I'm pretty sure. Again, Blackwell was an amazing example. I mean, we could just sit here and rattle off great games for the next 20, 30 minutes. But I think until we see sort of, I don't want to say the word acceptance, but just more of a inclination from the AAA market to approach the industry, approach their designs being more inclusive, I think that will be a very key turning point for this.
Okay, cool.
Again, definitely a serious chat. We need to have something to, we need some levity. Quick, Ken, insult EA.
Well, I would say that I'm really excited for Mirror's Edge Catalyst. Mm-hmm. However, everything else, no. And we didn't even talk about the Battlefield Quagmire.
Or when I spoke with Tim last week, we talked a little bit about Star Wars Battlefront and having like $70.
That's what I meant.
Okay, there we go. There's our moment of levity for the end of the cast. So, all right. So I think with that, we're going to wrap things up again. This is definitely one of those topics that we definitely should have more talks about, not just us, you know, on this podcast, but us in terms of the video game industry in general as well. And I think it'll definitely be an interesting time throughout 2016. Again, I mean, we literally just started 2016 10 days ago from at least the time of this recording. So we still have a whole lot more time to see what unveils there. So with all that said, oh, 1 second, I just got to make sure I turn off the auto disconnect from Amalto. Okay, 3, 2, 1. All right, so with that said, we're going to wrap things up here. James, Kent, it was a pleasure talking to you. We are recording this definitely later. It's after midnight. It's an after midnight on a Saturday night. So thanks both of you for coming on. It was definitely a great discussion.
Thanks for having me on. Sorry, I was typing something.
And James, definitely it'll be great to have you back on again. Hopefully we don't wait another 2 years to have you back on, or at least a year and a half.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll try to make myself a lot more accessible.
Awesome. And again, Ken, good luck with your new job, and hopefully we definitely need to have more discussions. That piracy one, I think, is very interesting. We should definitely start playing something around that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's a really good idea. And we also wanted to talk about the minorities cast, too, because that's what James wanted to talk about, too, in depth.
Okay.
So bring in some guests and do that, I think that'll be really cool. But I'll be doing some cool VR applications, and I will try to travel to your place and give you a demo so you can start to believe.
Okay. Yeah, we should definitely have one talking more about minorities. Yeah, but once we can start playing that one, we'll definitely have James back on. We'll have some new guests as well.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I have a couple of friends in mind that I think I'd like to pull in.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We'll talk more about that after the recording. All right, so for those of you listening, thanks so much for tuning into this cast. As always, if you'd like to support Game Wisdom, we have several options currently available. First, if you'd like to submit a guest piece for the site or be a future podcast guest, you can find all the information and links under Submissions Wanted on the front page. Right now, I am in code red for finding new podcast guests and new topics. So definitely, if you are a student, enthusiast, developer, whatever, as long as you're interested in talking about the video game industry and design, I am looking for you. So please send an email, get in touch any way you can. If you would like to contribute to the Game Wisdom Patreon campaign to secure some much-needed monthly funding, you can find me on Patreon under Game Wisdom, or by clicking that handy Patreon banner on the front page. Any donations would be greatly appreciated. And last but not least, to check out the variety of videos, let's plays, examinations I have on video games, you can find all that on the Game Wisdom YouTube channel. There are links on the front page. And you can check out my daily Twitch stream that happens most nights at 10 Eastern under GW Blazer. So again, thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you have a great rest of the week, and we will talk to you again next time. Take care, everybody.